Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Well, hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Listnick Behind the Curtain. You were just listening to the amazing voice of Broadway star, cabaret star, and CD star, Karen Mason. We're going to hear a lot about a new CD she's got coming out that will be available on Amazon starting on May 9th. You're not going to want to miss that. That's what we're going to talk about. But of course, welcome to Behind the Curtain, where we air here on WGN Plus every Saturday at 10:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. following the great Mike Toomey and his Laugh Tracks show, where he always seems to toss to me, and on Sundays, where we're on at 4 p.m. So hopefully you're having a great time here on WGN Plus watching all the new programming. Joining me, I've already given half her introduction to say that she indeed is a Broadway star, cabaret star, and the master of jazz and show music, Karen Mason. Karen, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, Paul. It's always good to see you. It really is.
Well, and same here. It's been a while. Last time we talked, you were in town performing in Love Never Dies, the Andrew Lloyd Webber show.
Right.
Madame Geary. But, you know, people who don't know your Broadway career, can I take a moment and just point to it a little bit?
Sure, absolutely.
People need to know. I mean, Sunset Boulevard has become such a big deal lately because of the revival on Broadway.
Right.
You were there in the Glenn Close days. You went on, Glenn Close missed a lot of shows. You went on hundreds of times.
Well, it wasn't just Glenn Close. I was the standby for Glenn Close, Betty Buckley, and Elaine Page. So, Right. You know, all those three very strong women, I got a chance to stand by for. And, you know, over a period of 2.5 years, I got a chance to, it was like, close to 250 times, 300 times. I mean, I was very lucky because it doesn't always happen with a standby that you get a chance to do the vacations and, you know, all the time off. So yeah. I was very lucky.
Proof of that, go ask Lainey Kazan how many times she went on for Barbara Streisand during Funny Girl.
Right, exactly. It was only a few, right?
I think it was zero. I think it was, she never missed.
No. She did go on because I remember hearing a story about how Lainey Kazan she knew she was going to go on, and she told every reviewer that she was going on and packed that place with all of those people. This is like lore from what I understand.
I love that. And I always said that, you know, it's like Streisand would never take a night off. I love it. Also, you created the role of Tanya in Mamma Mia.
I did.
That's a great role. And Abba, and you know, different. I mean, music from Abba, you do Julie Stein music. This is a celebration of Candor and Ebb.
Right.
Is there a favorite? I mean, if I were to say Karen Mason equals, who do you pick?
Wow, equals that. Well, equals.
Well, by equal, I mean, here's who you really want to perform.
Oh, well, luckily, I get a chance to do all of that. And with the new CD, which I have right here.
Yes, and we're showing the cover as well.
John Kander and Fred Ebb were very important to me because when I was growing up, I was, and still am, if you ask my husband, loud person. So
let me confirm that, because you, while you were born in New Orleans, you were raised in Chicago. So right. That's why you're a loud person. You're one of
that's
Chicago's
right.
very own.
Yeah, I'm a Midwesterner, and you know, you got to be loud and perky at the same time. So growing up, there was all of these soprano roles and very few for belters. And I've always said that, you know, the first time I heard the Candor and Ebb music, it was like perfect for this very loud middle child. And I just loved all their stuff. And the chance that I got to meet them was when I did the Off-Broadway musical And the World Goes Round.
Which is on that. We get some of that on this album.
Yeah. And, you know, it was an honor to meet them and to get to work with them because they were very integral to doing And the World Goes Round when it was being put together. You know, to have them in the room. I mean, how lucky am I? I've gotten to meet through being in New York. I've gotten to meet through ASCAP, Michael Kirker of ASCAP. I've gotten to meet Burton Lane, Sammy Kahn, Billy Goldenberg became a dear friend.
Julie Stein.
And Julie Stein, I met him briefly. Andrew Lloyd Webber and John Kander and Fred Ebb. And, you know, I mean, Lou Spence. I've been very lucky, very, very lucky. And to be able to sing the canon of John Kander and Fred Ebb is just a joy. I did the show, CD release in New York at Birdland, and John Kander came.
Oh.
Who's in his 90s, and still he goes out to nightclubs, and came to see the show and was the first one to stand and give me a standing ovation.
Now, did you know he was coming? Did you just see him sitting there? Because I know when people, like in the show Beautiful, the cast did not know when Carole King actually showed up and said they didn't want to know, they couldn't have handled it.
No. I think it's, I don't like knowing. Some people do. I do not. It makes me nervous. But it was so funny because he was right in front of me, but I couldn't see him because of the way the lights were in my eyes. So when he stood up, it was like, could not have been more centrally located. It just was amazing. I mean,
such amazing story. Yeah. And by the way, Simon and Garfunkel show, Art Garfunkel showed up at one of those guys' shows because I interviewed them.
Oh.
They didn't know he was there. Nobody, he went under an assumed name, and all of a sudden at the end of the show, he walks on stage. And these guys, and you can see it on YouTube, and there's various videos of that happening. It was just amazing. But let's talk about you. First of all, people should know Kander and Ebb, but if they don't, yes, these are the guys who wrote Cabaret, Chicago, New York. I mean, unbelievable shows, and you pull from so many of them for this album. But here's the thing, because I had a chance to hear the album, even though you won't see it on Amazon until May 9th, but that's all right. But
you can stream it now, buying it from Amazon. You can also buy it from my website, but
KarenMason.com.
But Amazon is overnight.
I was curious, like, okay, so like I've heard Vilkabin before. I've heard these songs. What were you going to do that was different? And you do. I mean, to me, Vilkabin and Joel Grey, but you have a really different take on it.
Yeah, thank you. You know, with working with my director, Barry Kleinbort, and my music director, Christopher Denny, after working together for 30-something years, we have this lovely triad of collaboration that is such a joy. And we each bring something different. Basically, they bring a lot of it, and I make sure that it fits me and then memorize it. And
would there a challenge when you did, like, you do my coloring book? Most people go, Barbara Streisand, and you're not wrong. But although I did learn it was actually first recorded by Sandy Stewart in 1962. She did it on the Perry,
Como.
Streisand recorded it the same year, but it was a bomb for her until she revised it. So you approached that song. Were either of those performers in your mind, or was it, no, Karen Mason's is doing coloring book?
Well, you know, I'm old now, so I like to think of it as my version. But of course, when I was growing up, I heard the Streisand version. You know, I mean, I was such a fan of Barbara Streisand. Barbara Streisand, Judy Garland, Frank Sinatra, you know, all of that genre, I just loved. The Great American Songbook to me spoke to my heart. And so to be able to do that. And then with the album, you know, we took New York, New York, which is a very hyper well-known song. All you have to do is do dun, 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 and people know what you're talking about. But we didn't want to do it just any old way. So we put it together with a song from Flora the Red Menace called One Good Break. And it's about my coming to New York, my leaving Chicago and, Arlington Heights and coming to New York, that dream of coming to New York. And I think it's a brand new way of listening to that.
So well done. But by the way, you also do relatively recent shows. I mean, Scottsboro Boys.
Yeah.
So it's not just those, you know, cabaret shows from many, many years ago. I mean, cabaret itself. But you also come a little bit newer. And you've got the classic Liza Minnelli, Ring Them Bells. You must have had a blast picking out the songs for this.
It was so much fun. And they just suit me to a T. I mean, I listened to Liza Minnelli a lot, too. If I could dance, I would be Liza Minnelli. In my dreams, may I just say, in my dreams, I would be Liza Minnelli. But, you know, she was so lucky to have them writing for her. I mean, what a gift.
Right. And one of the great songs, Colored Lights. But then to hear you, and by the way, on this album, you just work with the piano. You know, you could have orchestras behind you. You chose not to do that.
Yeah. And you know what? Actually, my husband and record producer, Paul Rolnick, that was his take on it. And he said, look, every time you hear Candor and Ebb, you hear horns, you hear all of this, or, you know, orchestration, you and Chris, he was speaking of me and Chris and I are really a very solid unit. We've been working together for so long that why pull in more? Why not just make that the essence of the CD, of the album? And I think people have been responding to that in a way that is fantastic. Yeah. And Ring Them Bells in particular we've been getting a lot of streams of that. People have been loving Ring Them Bells.
And maybe this time, by the way,
maybe
you
this
a song
time.
from the Visit, Love and Love Alone, Chita Rivera. I mean,
right. I did the demo for that. John called me after And the World Goes Round and said, would you consider doing a demo for us of a new show that we're going to do for Broadway? And it's like, well, John, let me think about that. Yes.
And congratulations on this album. Again, Amazon May 9th. You can stream it now. Candor and Ebb and all that jazz. Karen Mason, it's fabulous. When we come back after this commercial break, we're going to be talking to the cast of David Mamet's new show, Henry Ooh. Johnson, over at the Victory Gardens Theater. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
And welcome back to Paul Listening Behind the Curtain, as we now shift from the world of cabaret and Broadway to the world of drama, with a new play getting a Chicago premiere at the Victory Gardens Theater. Yes, Victory Gardens is back over on Lincoln Avenue. The play called Henry Johnson. And joining me now is the star of Henry Johnson. There are other actors that we'll talk about, but Dan Crimmer, who plays the role of Henry Johnson, and also Eddie Torres, who's the director of the show, also an actor, but not in this show.
Yeah.
Dan, let me start with you. This is a David Mamet play, and it's a Chicago premiere. It did have a premiere in L.A. as well. Talk to me about who Henry Johnson is and what the show's about.
Yeah, absolutely. So the play is about a man, Henry Johnson, that leads with compassion through his whole entire life and really trusts anybody, right, is guileless in some ways. And that journey is tracked through Henry Johnson, where it takes him first from an office into a prison. And then what is to follow, you have to see when you come watch the show.
That's very true. When I think of the character Henry Johnson, I mean, look, this is a Mamet play. So Mamet writes a lot about manipulation. Is it fair to say that your character, Henry, doesn't usually learn from his experiences?
Yeah, I think Henry trusts people too much. And I think his kindness sometimes outweighs his skepticism, right? And I think that's why the play plays out the way it does.
And by the way, that kindness and that sort of almost naivete of Henry Johnson, you play very well as I watch you throughout the show. You're actually the only actor, pretty much, who appears all throughout the play. Other actors come and go. They kind of have their scene. The one that gets a lot of buzz in the city, of course, is Thomas Gibson from Dharma and Greg and Criminal Minds, who plays the role of Gene. He has his major scene in which he is excellent. And then we have Keith Kupfer, who is very well known. I mean, he's just one of Chicago's acting treasures in pretty much every theater around. And of course, the show Ghostlight, which garnered awards. He plays Jerry, and then Al-Jaleel McGee playing Mr. Barnes. And he was known, he actually toured here in A Soldier's Story, but also Steppenwolf. All you guys have tremendous talents and stuff. Eddie, let me come to you.
Sure.
We're not going to talk politics, but I'm not going to ignore this. David Mamet it has put himself in a political world these last few years. Is it fair to say that that may be true? And I know that early on during, you know, previews and stuff, there were people who were concerned about that and maybe showed up at the theater. But the bottom line is, this is not a political play.
No, it's not. It's not a political play. It's a play that deals with human behavior. Basically, you know, I think what Mamet does really well, and he explores the way people handle, whether it's a manipulation or the con game, he deals directly with the result of what that is. And what that's one of the reasons what I was attracted to the play was his ability to deal with that. This is a play about human beings and human beings' behavior, especially towards each other. And that's what makes it apolitical. To me, it's about us as a human race and how we treat each other and why we do the things we do.
By the way, just a brief word. This is Victory Gardens making its return, but it's being presented in conjunction with Relentless Theater Group. Just briefly tell us, like, why the connection? Did we need Relentless to bring back Victory Gardens?
I mean, you need Relentless because Dan and I formed this company because we really wanted to do plays without having to be censored, plays that mattered, plays that explore and question and give the audience an opportunity to have discourse about the subject matter. And we felt very strongly that the community was kind of like leaving those plays aside because of all the tense moments, especially within our American culture with regards to race and to how we treat each other. So we wanted to be able to do plays that matter and that you can have discussions that dealt with difficult situations and subject matter.
Dan, you're also co-producing this show. So obviously you had some say about casting and that kind of thing. I'm curious, the fact that you bring in Thomas Gibson, who's a well-known name, when this had its world premiere in L.A., that play starred in that same role of Gene, Shia LaBeouf. Is there something about this play that calls for, let's have one nationally known name in this show, or was it coincidence?
No, I think we were just looking for the best actor, and Thomas is, first of all, an incredible human being and also an incredible talent. Working side by side with him is an absolute blessing. And when we talked to him about this play, it really sparked his imagination, and that's why me and Eddie were like, we have to get this gentleman involved and we have to fly him out here.
Yep.
Did you, by the way, either of you, but I'll start with you, Dan, because you are co-producing, did you have any interactions with Mamet? And I say that because somewhere in the materials, in the bio, you actually give thanks to David Mamet. It made me think you talked to him, you got permission.
Yeah, I talked to him for a whole of 6 minutes, but they were a great 6 minutes.
He said, send me a check, you're fine.
No. I think he gave us the Midwest premiere, and we're really thankful for that. To get to produce this in hometown, honestly, regardless of his politics, is an honor, right? Because this man has done so much for the American theatrical canon, right? And that's, you can't deny that. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure Eddie maybe has something to add as well.
It was important. Again, like I said, David Mamet's exploration of the way human beings treat each other is pretty spot on. And so for us, it really felt like we needed somebody to continue to work with that and understood that. So being Thomas and whether it's AJ or even with Dan, you know, or Keith, you know, we're all like-minded in the sense that we really wanted to do a piece that brought this kind of discourse to the audience. And Mamet certainly is that person. I mean, his politics are one thing, but why should he be censored because of his politics? Why not deal with the art and the work itself? So that's what we all came to the conclusion to, is that we wanted to do it because it was worth doing and because it's a really brilliant piece of art.
The sets are simple. Things just get moved around. It is the way they did it in L.A., so I have a feeling that's what's called for here. But it's a relatively short play, about 80, 85 minutes or so, yet there is an intermission. I would have thought, Eddie, I'll ask you this. This could have been a longer play if Mamet wanted it to be.
Yeah, I think it could have been, and I'm pretty sure he's probably maybe even thought about it. But I think the way the play ends is exactly, I think, the way it should have ended.
I'm not going to say how it ends.
You know, I'm not going to say anything about how it ends, but I don't think it needs to be any longer than that, because he deals with his language and the way he writes is very, very specific, you know, from its rhythm to how things are said and to how he wraps things up. It's very specific. And so I think sometimes, you know, we can say a play can be two acts or maybe even three acts. Do we really need that amount of playwriting? Right. So I think he's succinct and very short for a reason. And it's a very, it's an impactful because of that.
And by the way, these characters, I have to ask you, did Thomas, you know, Shia LaBeouf, I think, got tattooed up prior to this for some other role. We do see that with Thomas. Does he have all those tattoos, or was that, it's that's for the role and maybe they're not real? I don't know.
I don't know. What did you think?
I thought they were real.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll leave you with that thought.
Okay. And Dan, in doing this and having to carry your character and watch the change all the way, you know, watch him go through all of these things. What happens in your head as Henry goes through all of these different settings, as you say, from corporate to prison?
You know, I think that as an actor, just living through the circumstances and being affected and not judging the character, right, and just inhabiting that world is really what happens, you know. It's a ride. It's really a roller coaster to play the role. And it's a blessing to get to do it, you know, 5 times a week.
Yeah, it truly is a joy. By the way, if you have another 6-minute conversation with Mamet, I do know that he cast in your role in L.A. his son-in-law. And when they made a movie of the Phil Spector story, and I worked in that case, I thought he would cast Tom Cruise as me, and he cast his wife. There's a thing going on here we need to talk to David Mamet about when it comes to casting. But that being said, Henry Johnson by David Mamet playing the Victory Gardens through May 11th. Through May 11th, that is extended. It means things are going well. Tickets can be gotten at victorygardens.org. And it's an incredible play. Daniel, congratulations to you and Eddie as well for directing. But your performance is really, really wonderful. And it is a real treat. The other casting, what a great job between AJ and Thomas and Keith. Fantastic. I encourage everybody to see this. It's a great experience. Henry Johnson, Victory Gardens Theater through May 11th. Thank you so much for being with me.
Thank you. Thank you so much.